You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, this Saturday morning. A very good morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's start off with this declassified US intelligence report that has concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved of that operation that killed dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah, well, this is quite an extraordinary move by the Biden administration, declassifying the intelligence that the United States has gathered about the 2018 killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Of course, it took place in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And the report that has been released here today says that the prince, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, personally approved a plan either to capture or kill Jamal Khashoggi, who, of course, was a Saudi Arabian citizen, a thorn in the side of the royal family in Saudi Arabia, but he was also a permanent resident of the United States. He had a green card that afforded him some degree of American government protection. And top Biden administration officials told reporters that the reason they were declassifying this intelligence report is because they didn't want to be involved in sweeping anything under the carpet. And indeed, they were doing it in order to honor the memory of Jamal Khashoggi, not just killed, but his body dismembered in that consulate in Istanbul by a kill team deployed to Turkey by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The intelligence report says that the Crown Prince is the principal mover, the principal force behind government in the kingdom, given the fact that King Salman is now 85 and is known to be suffering from a range of health challenges. So essentially, US intelligence concluded that there were no circumstances under which it was not likely that the Crown Prince himself had been personally involved in approving this plot to kill Jamal Khashoggi. Indeed, the intelligence agencies say that Crown Prince Salman is known to have supported other acts of violence against other critics of the Saudi government in other parts of the world. I think it's important to underscore that this intelligence was not gathered, of course, during Joe Biden's time in the presidency. It was gathered on President Donald Trump's watch. And indeed, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the time insisted that he had read every word of the U.S. intelligence that had been gathered about the slaying of Jamal Khashoggi and saw no reason, he said, to point the finger of blame at Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. So given that this is exactly the same intelligence report that the former Secretary of State claims that he read, there are all sorts of questions for him about how he failed to conclude that some kind of action was necessary to put all of this into the public domain, especially given that green card that Jamal Khashoggi possessed, a permanent resident of the United States, entitled to some degree of response from the US government for his murder. So there are questions abounding here, not just for the Saudis, but also for officials with the former US administration who ought to have been very embarrassed by the disclosures that this report contained when it was put into the public domain by the Biden administration just a couple of hours ago.
Simon, this report, though, it could dent or severely, you know, damage those US-Saudi ties for years. Talk about that.
Well, I think it's going to have a massive impact on the traditionally warm relationship, the friendship that has existed between the United States and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, not just under Republican presidents, but under successive presidents here, dating back 50, 60, 70 years. Multiple U.S. governments have been accused by critics of Saudi Arabia of turning a blind eye to human rights abuses inside the kingdom, turning a blind eye to a situation where until recently women weren't allowed to drive. There are still very strong social strictures in place in Saudi Arabia, as you know. President Biden telephoned King Salman on Thursday, we believe, to discuss the contents of this report, although the White House readout of that call simply says that the president was pressing King Salman on the issue of universal human rights and human values, and talking about ways of advancing the U.S.-Saudi relationship through that prism. We know from the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki that President Biden has no intention whatsoever of speaking directly with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The White House has said, look, he's not the president's counterpart. The president's counterpart is the king, because the king is the man in charge. But this intelligence report suggests very clearly that, in fact, it's the Crown Prince that's running things in Saudi Arabia. So how that's going to work in an environment in which President Biden has no intention, it is said, of speaking with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, at least over the short term, I think is a very, very big question. Also, this issue of the White House saying, well, the president will only deal with his counterparts. Well, that argument is not being consistently applied by the Biden administration. Just a few days ago, Vice President Kamala Harris was invited to have a conversation with President Emmanuel Macron of France. That's not counterpart to counterpart. Today, we've heard that the vice president has had a call with the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So again, that's not counterpart to counterpart. So there are all sorts of questions in all of this for the Biden administration. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced here tonight that 76 Saudi nationals are going to face a ban on their ability to access U.S. visas. The U.S. accusing them of having been involved in previous efforts to hit out violently at critics of the Saudi regime. It's interesting that Mohammed bin Salman is not on that list, nor is the Crown Prince about to have his assets frozen in the United States. So the Biden administration is keeping a fair old bit of powder dry as it seeks, I think, to determine precisely how it's going to engage in this discussion going forwards with Saudi Arabia, especially given that it's already presaged a harder line towards Saudi Arabia by pulling support from the United States for the Saudi military campaign against the Houthi rebels in Yemen. They, of course, are backed by Iran. The Saudis had been given carte blanche by the Trump administration to continue that military campaign with U.S.-supplied weaponry. The Biden administration, perhaps sensing that this report on the Khashoggi killing was about to come out, said within the last couple of weeks that they were withdrawing support for that military campaign. So the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia now sailing off into uncharted waters.
Simon, President Biden's first strike in Syria, let's talk about that. It targeted Iran-backed militias, and this is in response to rocket attacks on American forces in the region in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always a big moment, isn't it, when any American president first authorizes military action, particularly in that part of the world. Seven 500-pound American bombs dropped on some buildings that straddled the border between Iraq and Syria. The munitions all reportedly exploded on the Syrian side of the border. This was a precision bombing strike, says the Pentagon, and it was designed to disrupt what has been described by Defense Department officials here as buildings that were serving as the site from which those Iran-backed militias had been launching attacks against U.S. and allied forces in northern Iraq. One Filipino contractor working alongside U.S. forces was killed in one of those strikes just about 10 days ago. There are reports of casualties on the ground, more than 20 of them. The Pentagon is not being drawn on that at the moment. They say that their battlefield damage assessment is still underway. But we also learned today that President Biden was given the opportunity to engage in more stringent military strikes, and in fact decided to go for a lesser military option amid concerns that civilian casualties could have been incurred as a result of broader military action. I think the White House keen here to send a message to those Iran-backed militias to desist from the kind of activities in which they've been engaged over the last few weeks. All of this raising fresh questions about what level of US troop presence the White House is going to authorize to remain on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq, because as we talked about last week, Justine, you know, those many of those troops supposed to be pulling out as a result of the decision that the Trump administration made to bring everybody back home. But the Biden administration clearly looking at instability on the ground in the region from through a different prism.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, and I'm speaking with our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's switch gears now to the vaccines and the US launching a massive effort to educate Americans about the COVID-19 vaccines. Talk about the reaction to this.
Well, I mean, better late than never, frankly. I mean, it is just extraordinary, the absence of a public health education campaign up until now with regard to COVID-19 vaccinations in the United States. And if you take a look, even here in Washington, D.C., at what's taking place, vaccine supplies in Washington, D.C. are insufficient for the 700,000 residents of Washington, D.C. But those vaccine supplies that exist are being equitably distributed throughout the city. And yet it is absolutely clear that in some parts of the city, they are not being as aggressively embraced by some communities as they are in other parts of the city. And there's now research that's been conducted on a national scale, a new YouGov poll that came out this week showing that African-American communities and Republican communities are less likely to embrace the vaccine and say that they want to get it than other communities in the United States. So there is a desperate need for a public health education campaign along the lines of the one that has already been rolled out on the other side of the Atlantic in the UK. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you can hop onto YouTube and find a video that was produced for Britain's National Health Service featuring Elton John and Michael Caine encouraging everybody in the UK to get vaccinated. There's been no equivalent of that here, and no attempt to engage in targeted public health education messaging for those communities that are spurning the vaccine. And remember, you know, if those communities spurn the vaccine, that's going to create massive problems for all those people who take the vaccine, because it's going to maintain vulnerabilities in terms of the spread of COVID-19 in the United States going forward. So there is now going to be this new targeted advertising campaign that is going to start rolling out and will indeed target some of those communities where vaccine pickup is at a far lower level than public health officials would like to see. But I have to say, you know, this has been an extraordinary week in the United States. On Monday, President Biden, as you know, led the nation in a moment of silence and prayer as the country marked the 500,000th death from the virus. And amid all the talk in some other countries about corners being turned and paths back to normalcy gradually being charted, we're still struggling here just to get the basic vaccine distributed throughout the country. And even today, the mayor of Washington, D.C., taking to Twitter again and pleading for more vaccine supplies to be made available to the residents of the nation's capital. If it's like that here, you can only imagine what's happening in the middle of the country and in other parts of the United States. So it is still a pretty dark picture here, and there's a long road ahead.
Simon, let's just finally finish with the markets. A very, very mixed week, down a lot of the time and hit by that bond rout.
Yes, absolutely. Let's just look at the numbers for Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average losing 1.5 percentage points in value. The S&P down 0.5 percentage point in value. Tech stocks had a rebound, though. The Nasdaq closed just over 0.5 percentage point up in value. But yes, absolutely. Concerns about hidden risks within various bonds, and that rout in bonds has caused problems for traders on Wall Street throughout the week, and also concerns about where economic stimulus talks are going here in Washington, D.C., after this extraordinary news that the Senate parliamentarian, an unelected civil servant, has told the White House that no, Joe Biden can't have his $15 an hour minimum wage that's included in the $1.9 trillion stimulus package that the president's been hoping to get through Congress. That's been a depth charge for Democrats, who now have to decide what to do, and it could seriously delay the passage of those stimulus plans, which again is causing instability in Wall Street. And I think really surprise here, the idea that the U.S. government is basically being told by a senior civil servant on Capitol Hill that even though you told the American people in the election this is what you were going to do, but now you can't do it because it doesn't meet the strictures and rules and regulations necessary for the passage of this legislation, has definitely been a big blow for the Democrats, and not one they were necessarily anticipating. That's going to feed into more nervousness on the markets in the days ahead.
All right, Simon, as always, thank you for talking to us here in Singapore and keeping us updated. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow. That's our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C.